You're listening to Health Talk by TriHealth, a monthly podcast to help you take charge of your own healthcare and live a healthier, happier life. I'm Tom Tumbush. When a child transitions from pediatric care to adult primary care, there's a lot more involved than just a change in physician. It requires an organized transition process that enables a young person to gain independent healthcare skills, prepare for an adult model of care, and transfer to new healthcare providers at a time when they're developing independence in many other ways. With me to discuss how physicians and parents can support this important step into adulthood are Dr. Robert Trevez, a primary care physician with Queen City Physicians, Western Ridge, and Dr. Abigail Stein, a pediatrician at Group Health Western Hills. Dr. Trevez, Dr. Stein, welcome to Health Talk.
Hey, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
Dr. Stein, let's start with you. Tell our listeners, how does pediatric care differ from adult medicine? What are the complexities involved with both sides?
So there are definitely a lot of important differences between the two, and I'm going to try to be careful since I know there's an adult doctor, Dr. Chavez, on the line here. In medicine, we kind of have an understanding that kids are not just small adults, and on the flip side, adults are also not just big kids. An important difference for patients and parents to recognize is that in pediatric care, providers tend to take more ownership over health problems. And in adult care, the patient is really expected to take a little bit more ownership. So for example, if you don't show up to your visit in pediatrics, you'll probably be tracked down. While this happens under specific circumstances in adult medicine, it is much less likely to occur. In pediatric care, you tend to have more options for multidisciplinary approach. This tends to be a little more evident for children with complex healthcare needs. So they could potentially see multiple subspecialists or therapists or dietitians within one single clinic. Whereas in adult care, those tend to be a little more siloed and you would need to arrange those independently.
Well, that's a great summary of the differences between the two different types of care. Can pediatricians in general treat adults or vice versa, or is that not permitted?
Technically, pediatricians can treat adults. But I think honestly, the better question might be if you want us to. there have absolutely been times, although really not since residency, where I've been put in the position of needing to care for a few patients that were in their 30s or so. These were really special scenarios. So adults with cancers that were more frequently cared for by pediatric oncologists or with developmental delays that caused them to have some specific benefits from pediatric care. But in every scenario like this, you run the risk of the patient potentially having a medical issue come up that would be better cared for by a doctor who's trained to care for adults. So in peds, you can't see my air quotes here, but we often refer to these as adult problems. A good example of this, honestly, is something like a heart attack. It's not that heart attacks aren't possible in kids, but they're incredibly rare. So most pediatricians haven't had to take care of a patient with a heart attack since medical school. While we understand the basics of what's happening in the body and the basics of treatment, because again, we learn those things in medical school, the patient would be much better cared for by someone who sees and cares for heart attacks on a regular basis.
So approximately what age do patients typically transition from pediatric care into adult medicine?
So this might seem like such a simple question, but the answer really can depend on quite a few different factors and may even vary from provider to provider within a single office or even depend on the individual patient. So just kind of bear with me here as I try to walk through this. You know, in a perfect world, by the age of 21, every young adult is medically healthy and stable and has no major social or emotional issues and knows the name and dose of all their medicines, knows how to make their appointments and communicate with their doctor, or even just, you know, knows the name of their doctor, remembers to bring their insurance card to appointments, et cetera, et cetera. But of course, you know, if you've ever interacted with a 21-year-old, you know that this is clearly not always the case. And I don't mean to rip on young adults and adolescents right out of the gate. We've all been there. When I was 21, I totally did not have all of this stuff down, or even most of this stuff down, honestly. What's interesting is we know that the American Academy of Pediatrics, or the AAP, identifies the upper age limit of pediatrics as 21, but we and they also recognize that this is a little arbitrary. We know that brain development has not reliably reached adult levels of functioning until well into our 20s. So all that being said, the AAP, along with some other medical societies, recommend that the transition occur somewhere between ages 18 and 21, but there are definitely times when this may not necessarily be appropriate, and waiting a few more years might ultimately be the best thing for that individual patient.
Well, thank you. Dr. Treves, I'd like to get some of your input on this as well. Dr. Stein gave us some of the skills that young people need in order to make their own health decision. Are there others that you would add to that?
That's a really great question. So I think one of the challenges that we find ourselves faced with is making sure that, you know, the patient-doctor relationship, and particularly communication between patients and doctors, you know, is something that's very, very strong. Because really, you know, I'm a firm believer in the fact that, you know, the bedrock of good medical practice is, you know, is good communication, because it just can't happen without that. So I do have a few patients that are, you know, 19, 20, 21, and they have transitioned from peds over to my neck of the woods. And I think really, you know, the best thing is just keeping in mind that you have to communicate with your doctors. There's a lot of data out there. There's been surveys that have been done with providers that kind of show what some of the challenges are, either on the provider's end or on the patient's end. And some of these surveys, you know, point out that things like, you know, overutilization of ERs, for example, is something that younger people tend to do, just because, you know, you're younger, you may not be planning for, you know, issues down the road in terms of healthcare or anything like that. And instead of just making an appointment with your doctor, you just run over to your local ER. So things like that, making sure that you're communicating with your patients, that there are, you know, tools like MyChart, for example, and that patients are aware of that and they know that they can message their doctor through that, really, really tends to help facilitate that. So that's one of the challenges that I see, particularly with my young patients. But, you know, that's not something that's unique just to younger people. A lot of older adults have that, you know, need to be reminded of that as well. So, yeah, that's definitely one of the things that we need to always keep in mind, too. Now, when it comes to internal medicine, I think, you know, there are certain caveats, and we kind of touched upon this a little while ago, when it comes to, you know, who sees who in terms of what age. And like Dr. Stein said, there's no like specific, you know, black and white, you know, number or age, I should say. And even when a patient transitions from pediatrics to adult medicine, to internal medicine, there are some conditions that they might continue to be seen by their original doctors. I mean, there are congenital heart issues that are diagnosed in adolescence. And a lot of internists, again, have a background, just like Dr. Stein mentioned, and they're, you know, well-versed in these issues. But in terms of, you know, everyday practice, you know, the experience of treating these things, that might be lacking. So it's not uncommon to see patients with, for example, again, these congenital heart issues continue to be seen by their pediatricians, or to continue to go to Cincinnati Children's, for example, and are followed by their cardiologists. So that's something to keep in mind too. So it's not this automatic, you know, all the relations that you've created with providers in the past are automatically ended, and now you see new people. That does happen to a degree, but not all. Ways, you know, so there are some finer like caveats that you need to be aware of when it comes to that.
That's good to know. Are there risks involved with young people moving to adult medicine?
I don't know if I would use the word risks per se. I think if anything, I think challenge is probably a better word. And there are some challenges, because again, you're rebuilding that rapport with a brand new patient. You know, you need to build trust. You have to understand what the history is with these patients. And that's not unique to adult medicine or pediatrics. But I think younger people might not be as forthcoming with certain issues. And you'd see the same thing with adults also. So that's always something you have to keep in mind, that you're seeing someone brand new. It's a different office, possibly. It's obviously a different doctor. So that's definitely, you know, some of the challenges, or a challenge, I'd say. Again, making sure you understand like what their personal history is, and seeing if everything that has been going on up to the point that you meet them, if that's something that you're going to be managing, and if not, who are the specialists that they need to continue to see, or who are new specialists that they need to be referred to. So making sure that's taken care of as well is something that can be a little bit challenging, I think. But again, you know, just communicating with your doctor and putting forth the effort in forming that doctor-patient relationship goes a very, very long way, I think.
Now, while we're talking about personal history and background and such like that, are there certain populations that face more challenges or are more likely to fall away from the relationship with a primary care provider or from self-care after they make that transition?
Oh, yeah. No, for sure. And some of these might be a little bit more unique to younger patients, but definitely not all of them. For example, you know, socioeconomic background is something that does play a role in if a patient's going to be following up with you. Obviously, if there are financial hurdles that you need to overcome, you know, that might make it difficult. If the patients have trouble affording medications, if they have trouble affording co-payments, things of that nature, that is something that always plays a role. And that's something that's not unique to just pediatrics, for example, or just younger patients. Now, other issues that you might come into contact with transitions would be the support system. So my experience has been that your support system or the support system that the patient has plays a huge role in this as well. Patients that I have that have recently transitioned over to adult medicine usually show up with their mom or their dad for the first visit or two or three, maybe. Just to make sure that at least from like a parent standpoint, you know, they get to meet the doctor also, they get to see the office, they get to see the staff, they get to see how everyone is working, the kind of care that they're getting. Because obviously parents want to have that reassurance that, you know, this is a new provider, this is a new location that they might be going to. They want to know that, you know, they feel also comfortable with it too. So that's something that we see also. Now, when it comes to the point where these patients that have transitioned over to adult medicine kind of get that sort of freedom to call their doctor whenever they feel it's necessary and show up to their own appointments. Maybe that might be a little bit of a challenge there when they don't have, you know, people reminding them or, you know, if they're caught up with other things, you know, with college or what have you. So that could be something that can play into, you know, appropriate follow-up. And that's something that I've seen also on my end too.
Now, you mentioned parents sometimes showing up with their children when they first start seeing a primary care physician. How hard is it for mom and dad to give up control of healthcare decisions for their children typically?
Oh, well, you know, I really haven't encountered, you know, significant issues with that. I think parents know their kids really well. Okay. They definitely know them better than I ever will, even though I'm their doctor. And even if I'm, you know, with them, you know, years down the road, I think, you know, your parents know you really well. I don't think there's ever really been too much of an issue with that. I think if anything, what I've witnessed is that they get the freedom to come in, you know, when they feel it's necessary for any sort of scheduled follow-up. They do check in also. Some of them have access to their kids' MyChart. So they message me also. They call the office also. So, you know, obviously as long as, you know, they have, you know, they've been given permission and all of that to engage in conversations with me about their children's healthcare, you know, that's totally fine. So that's how I see that. I don't really see too much of like any pushback with that or too much of any, you know, significant hurdles to overcome. I think it's really, you know, it's a question of just kind of getting used to the idea that their kids, you know, have cell phones and they have their own cars and they have their own, they're working and they have their own money also. And they're starting to get that freedom. It's just another step, you know, from becoming this sort of emerging adult into, you know, you're a full-fledged adult and, you know, being responsible enough to follow up with this stuff.
Thank you. Dr. Stein, we've talked about when a child is ready and how it can vary depending on their personal development and other factors. But from your personal experience, how do you know when a young adult or a youth is ready for an independent relationship with a provider?
Yeah. So, you know, I just want to reiterate with this one that every provider, every patient, and every relationship between the two is completely unique. So it really does depend. Like I voiced earlier, the most ideal time is by age 21, but in a lot of cases, this might not necessarily be the best thing for the patient. So when handing the care of one of our patients over to the adult provider, we as pediatricians really want to feel confident that this patient is ready. And that's not only from a medical standpoint, but also from a social and emotional standpoint as well. So, you know, you might not realize this, but that social and emotional piece here is really huge, especially for this age group. we know that a lot of these young adults, like I mentioned earlier, in their early 20s have not reached that adult level brain functioning. However, for better or worse, they're starting to transition to that period where they're making decisions on their own. You know, we like to think of this age group as being super healthy, no problems, no issues, and not needing a lot of medical care, but they actually really tend to be a pretty vulnerable group. So this is the time when behavioral health risks are really high, when new chronic conditions are often arising or worsening, mental health conditions are peaking, and many are still trying to figure out their education, housing, employment, relationships, et cetera. So it's, you know, it's a really stressful time. That being said, while it might be impossible to always have that perfect transition point, we really want to make sure that kids are in a relatively stable position before making that move. So for example, if they're at a time when their depression is at its peak, or if they are on the verge of dropping out of school, or worse, something like homelessness, their first priority is obviously not going to be to get on the phone and to find a new doctor. And this ultimately leaves them with no care at all, or like Dr. Chavez had mentioned, going, you know, to the ER for their care. And that's really what we're trying to avoid for these patients. Now, for kids who have more complex medical issues like developmental disorders or sickle cell disease or chronic lung disease, the transition may take a little longer and be done in kind of a more stepwise process. So for example, it might be best to first transition your primary care doctor and then followed by the subspecialist and then the next subspecialist, so you're not stuck, you know, trying to switch everything over at once.
All at one time.
Right.
Yeah. So are there ways that parents and caregivers can support young adults in building knowledge regarding their own health and kind of prepare them for that transition?
Oh, yes. This is kind of a fun one. I think Dr. Trevez sees this after it's kind of already happened and the parents have adjusted. But from, you know, watching parents in the room, it can kind of be tough. So, you know, you're used to taking the driver's seat for your kid and you know, lifting them up onto the table and answering most of those questions and facilitating everything. So it can be really tricky to just kind of hang back in the corner of the room, watch your kid kind of fumble through answering those questions without, you know, trying to resist that urge to jump in. And that's especially hard if some of their answers are, you know, white lies about how many veggies they're eating or how much they're exercising, that kind of thing. But trust me, we see your, you know, smiles in the corner and we know what's happening. So keep working at it, even though it's tough. Switching gears a little bit, one thing that we're supposed to be doing is taking time during that well visit to talk to your adolescent one-on-one. Occasionally, we can't do this if your child has a lot going on and we're limited by time, but it really is important. And honestly, this is actually one of my favorite parts of being a pediatrician. So once the parent leaves the room, it really kind of just pushes them a little bit, puts them in the hot seat. Sometimes the first few times we do this, they'll be a little shy, not say much, and that's okay. It's just a matter of getting used to things. But other times I see this kind of really cool thing happen where they perk up and kind of brighten up a little bit. And honestly, I think that comes from knowing that for that moment in time, they're in charge of their own health and they're excited to take that ownership. Most of the time, parents are really thankful that I'm taking the time to do this. And only very rarely will I have parents who seem kind of surprised or taken aback or concerned about me asking them to leave the room. But I really do encourage any parents out there to be open to this process. So not only does the AAP recommend it, but it's a great way to help your child adjust to what will be expected of them in the future. Some other just kind of basic things you can do include, you know, pushing them to know the names and doses of any medicines they might be on. So if any of my patients are listening, they're probably rolling their eyes at me a little bit on this one, but I always quiz my adolescents on their medicines and definitely encourage parents to do the same. Along that same line, you can encourage them to call and make their own appointments with your guidance, of course, and within reason, involve them in some of their medical decisions.
Here's a question I'd like to hear a response from both of you. How can pediatric and primary care physicians work together to make this transition easier for young adults? Dr. Trevez, why don't we start with you?
So I think probably the best thing, you know, a pediatrician and an internist can do when it comes to making sure that nothing's missed and this transition goes as smoothly as possible is communicating with one another. You know, there are a lot of patients out there that maybe aren't as complicated, that they don't have as much, you know, going on, but there are definitely a ton out there that have a lot of issues that have a past medical history that's more challenging and more daunting, you know, I even say, because I think, you know, as physicians, we don't know it all. We don't. And we need help just like everybody else though sometimes. So I think, you know, if it's a particularly, you know, challenging sort of history that a patient has, just taking a little bit of time and just having a conversation with the doctor that's going to be, you know, picking up care for this patient is invaluable. And just to touch on something that Dr. Stein mentioned briefly, you know, the impression or like the sort of perspective that it's easy to have, you know, that, you know, younger people are healthy, younger people are fine, like there's nothing that's going on, you know, it's just like a kind of like in and out sort of deal, and you're most likely not going to really encounter any challenges is definitely false. You know, that's the case for some people, definitely not the case for a lot of people. And Dr. Stein mentioned mental health. That's huge. That's definitely something that's huge. So you have to watch out for these things. You know, issues with, you know, substance abuse, smoking, you know, sedentary lifestyle are all important. Risk factors are important issues that you want to make sure you're addressing. Sexually transmitted diseases, also something that's big. Making sure you're keeping up with vaccinations. A lot of things that can fly under the radar when we have this perspective that, oh yeah, they're young, they should be fine, they should be healthy. That's definitely something that, you know, it's easy to kind of adopt that way of thinking. But yeah, like I said, just making sure you're communicating with one another. And I think, you know, within TriHealth, I think we do an excellent job. I've never really had any issues reaching out to any of my colleagues about a particular patient or about a particular issue. And, you know, I've been left kind of twisting in the wind without an answer. I think that's something that we truly do excel at, I think. And that's I find that to be invaluable.
Yeah, I completely agree. That communication piece is so huge, and it is nice, you know, technology helps in a many ways. So just having, you know, being able to look back at the record, especially if you're making that transition from pediatric care within TriHealth to adult care within TriHealth, the patient record is so helpful. But then also, you know, taking some time on our end to just kind of send that future physician, you know, a message, because not everything is documented perfectly in those notes. Sometimes you need that kind of extra info that can help take things to the next level. You know, I think also from the pediatric standpoint as well, some helpful things that we can do is honestly just starting early and having these conversations and starting this process. So, you know, the AAP actually recommends starting this transition conversation. And I say conversation and not transition because it's early. So they recommend starting to talk about this around ages 12 to 14, which sounds a little nuts because that's really far from that 18 to 21 when we really do the actual transition. But, you know, it really does kind of just help to set the stage. So that 12 to 14 year discussion is a lot less about, hey, start looking for an adult doctor, I'm kicking you out of this practice soon, and a lot more about just making sure that kids are building that solid foundation for being able to take control of their own medical care someday down the road. So, you know, this means understanding their own health and their health problems, understanding the medications they take, understanding what vaccines are necessary and why, and hopefully including them in some shared decision making.
Excellent. Dr. Treves, one of the other topics that I was asked to cover with you was medical power of attorney. Could you tell our listeners what that is?
So it's essentially when, you know, it's a question of who has decision-making power. Now we see that come up in a lot of points. Obviously, the topic being transitioning from, you know, pediatric medicine to adult medicine. You know, that's obviously, it's going to come up at that point. We see it, you know, end of life when people might not be able to make decisions for themselves because of whatever conditions that they have. So really, it just comes down to who's making the calls when it comes to decision making and when it comes to therapy, when it comes to these important situations regarding personal health care.
Now, is it common for parents of college-aged children, for example, to employ medical power of attorney to assist their children in a situation where they might have a medical emergency?
So yes, I don't see that situation coming up personally, in my practice all too much. So I haven't seen it with me, but yeah, it is something that, that can happen for sure. A lot of it depends on, what the background of the patient is also, if there's any sort of, you know, cognitive deficit or if there's any sort of, past medical history that would make us feel that, okay, decision-making might be best left to, you know, an adult, a parent, or whoever. So it's not terribly common, but it definitely happens for sure.
One final question for both of you. how important is it to see your doctor regularly, like have regular checkups and whatnot, not just going in when you feel sick or unwell? Dr. Stein, why don't we start with you?
Oh my goodness, so important. So, you know, there is a reason that we recommend doing those annual checkups. And it's not just to, you know, bring you in and just kind of talk about whatever. It's really so that we can assess every single facet of your care. So, you know, we're so used to bringing kids in when they're really young and you're assessing all that development and getting their vaccines in and just making sure that they're growing appropriately nutrition wise. But really, gosh, it is the same thing for adults. So, you know, instead of development, it's more really, you know, your psychological health, your well-being, you know, how you're doing socially, checking your blood pressure, those vital signs, making sure that there's nothing that's going missing when we do that exam, your heart, your lungs, your belly, everything. And I think so much of that kind of goes amiss in this world of ERs and urgent cares, but really it's shown that patients are going to get better care and be healthier when they're seen regularly by their primary care doctor. So it really, really is so important and helps a lot.
So yeah, I can't agree more. It is extremely important, extremely important. And, you know, the misconception of, oh, I just need to see my doctor whenever I just feel something is, you know, I feel something's off is definitely not the way to approach medicine. You know, it's not the way to approach your healthcare. You don't want to take this sort of just reactionary response. You want to be proactive about things. And that's what we want also. I mean, there are so many things that I've diagnosed that, you know, don't make patients necessarily feel sick or feel bad, like hypertension, for example. Nobody feels, for the most part, oh, I'm hypertensive right now. And that, so there are a lot of these quiet sort of diseases that you need someone who is, you know, trained to diagnose them to see you on a regular basis. There's a lot of age-related screenings that are very important to get done. There's vaccines. There's a lot of preventative health care, you know, preventative being the operative word, because we want to prevent disease. We don't want to wait for people to get sick. We don't want to wait for, you know, your life to change and take some negative turn until we do something. We want to make sure that you stay in this positive trajectory when it comes to physical health, when it comes to mental health. And seeing your doctor, seeing your internist, I mean, there's just so many things that can be addressed with these visits. And even if it's just a regular physical exam, it's just really important to make sure you continue to have that established care with your doctor. Because in the event that you do need them, you know who to call. You know what I mean? It's, again, it's not just a question of just going to urgent care, although those are awesome places. They definitely serve an important purpose. But when you see your doctor and you see your doc that's part of a network like TriHealth, where it's not just your internist, but it's a whole, you know, large group of other subspecialists, you know, there's a tremendous value to that. And you're really doing yourself a disservice if you just kind of just waiting until I feel a little sick and then I'll just kind of figure out what's going on then. Maintaining that doctor-patient relationship is extremely important. I can't say enough about that.
All right. That's great advice. Well, Dr. Treves, Dr. Stein, thank you so much. You've done a great job of helping us see both sides of this journey. And I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be with us on Health Talk today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Health Talk by TriHealth, where leading local care professionals help you to stay up to date on proactive healthcare strategies and to live a healthier lifestyle. New episodes of Health Talk by TriHealth are released on the first Tuesday of every month. I hope you'll join us next time. You can listen to Health Talk online at TriHealth.com or search for Health Talk by TriHealth on SoundCloud, Apple iTunes, or your favorite podcast source. This is Tom Tumbush. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is intended for informational purposes only. It should not be relied upon to make a diagnosis or for treatment purposes, and this podcast does not create a physician-patient relationship. Please consult your healthcare provider or contact TriHealth to make an appointment if medical attention is needed. The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individuals interviewed and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of TriHealth or any of its affiliates. This podcast is the copyrighted work of TriHealth, which owns the exclusive rights thereto. Unauthorized use, copying, and dissemination are illegal.
Copyright 2020, TriHealth. All rights reserved.